Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. We have with us today Chris Smith, who is the coordinator with the North Coast State Forest Coalition, also with the Sierra Club, and Trigvi Steen from Portland State University, who is a long-term faculty member and forest ecologist. And what we're going to be talking about today is a proposed timber sale in the Clatsop State Forest. And Chris, maybe you can start us off. The Oregon Department of Forestry is making plans for their operations in 2016, and among those plans is a sale in the Clatsop State Forest that you have some problems with.
Yeah, so the place to start is that the Department of Forestry recently, this spring, published for comment their fiscal year 2016 operations plans, and that's primarily timber sales, but some other activities as well. And these operations aren't actually carried out in 2016. They'll be carried out in the years to follow. But one that particularly concerned me as I was going through it was the sale called the Homesteader Timber Sale. And this is near Jewell, Oregon, in the Clatsop State Forest, right along the Nehalem River. And from my experience, tramping around the Clatsop and Tillamook Forest for the last few years, this is probably some of the best quality old-growth forests that we have left up here on the North Coast, and certainly in public ownership. So I was intrigued, and I went out to check the sale with Trigvi here, and we were pretty blown away by the type of forest habitat that we found. And that kind of prompted this data collection effort, and eventually it prompted our opposition to the clear cuts that they have proposed for this area.
You and the Oregon Department of Forestry have been exchanging thoughts about this timber sale, and you mentioned old growth forest, and I noticed in their response to you, one of the things they said is that these trees aren't really old enough to be considered old growth, and I looked at their definition of old growth, and they're talking about trees that are from 175 to 250 years old, which takes us back to Lewis and Clark.
Right.
When they were here. Do we have many of those trees left around here?
Yeah, I'll provide a brief response, and then I think Trigvi is probably best qualified. But I am a little perplexed by the department's definition. First of all, it's reliant on age rather than actual forest structure and characteristics. So that's interesting. And it's a broad range. It's 75 years or so. According to the Department of Forestry, the Northwest Oregon State Forests have less than 0.01% old growth. So that's pretty indicative of how little that type of forest they have. And their response that this isn't old growth, I think, is based on their definition, which I find problematic, but also I don't think it really aligns with a lot of more general thoughts about forestry, and maybe that's where, Trig, you could come in.
Defining old growth strictly based on age, I think, is a fundamental error. Basically, here in the Coast Range, these trees are capable of growing to old growth kinds of sizes very much more quickly than the time frame they mention. We're dealing, in the case of Area 2 of Homesteader, with trees that are very large number, between 48 inches or 4 feet and 5 feet in diameter. And this is in stark contrast to the pre-operations report, which characterizes the areas having trees of 20 inches in diameter. So there's a really fundamental shift in the nature of a forest between 20-inch diameter trees and these 4 to 5 foot diameter trees. These trees are very worth characterizing as old growth. And the thing is that old growth forest, yes, generally it takes a long time and the trees are old, but old growth is fundamentally defined with four major kinds of characteristics. The first is big old trees, and there certainly are big old trees, especially in Area 2, but in several of the other areas as well. And a multi-layer canopy. In other words, the forest has had enough time to develop trees of many different heights. A third characteristic is standing dead trees or snags. That's also a characteristic of these areas. And finally, downed logs, dead trees on the ground. All of those characteristics are present. And so to me, this is very appropriate to be identified as old growth. And just trying to hang your hat on age is just not right in my view.
Well, looking at that from a slightly different perspective, too, if it's true that only a tiny, tiny percentage of the trees in the Clatsop State Forest meet the age requirement, it also means you could cut anywhere, because 99.9% of the forest doesn't meet that definition, right?
Not only that, a key issue is that this is among the oldest forest that you're going to find on the Clatsop. And if you log it, you will never have old growth and never have that kind of quality forest environment.
Well, what the Department of Forestry did say in their response to you is that they would do this thoughtfully, and that when they found clumps of trees or trees that kind of fit the characteristics you're talking about, that they would kind of work around them. Do you not trust them to do that, or what's the problem with that?
I have a few thoughts on that. The first of my thoughts is that these sales are, they're called modified clear cuts, which is the state's version of a clear cut. And they do leave a certain amount of trees per acre. It's usually 5 to 7. And they may be thoughtful about leaving those trees and selecting the best trees to leave. But first of all, a clear cut is a clear cut. And if you're leaving 5 trees per acre, that doesn't really mitigate the drastic impact that you're having on the land. My second thought, having spent now a lot of time in this sale area, is that it's not a few lone trees or clumps of trees that represent these characteristics that are important for habitat. It is the majority of Area 2, I would say a dominant portion, and other significant portions of the sale areas. So leaving trees thoughtfully doesn't change the fact that you're clear-cutting a forest habitat.
Well, the Oregon Department of Forestry, they have to serve a lot of different masters. They're supposed to provide the highest, best long-term use for the people of Oregon. They're supposed to protect wildlife and streams. They're supposed to generate money. And the money that comes from the timber sale, I guess lots of it goes to local government entities or schools or so on. So you're a lot of pressures from different directions on them. Is there any kind of element of trust that you have with them, that they will do what they say they will do? Is that part of the issue or no?
I think it's an element. I've worked closely with the department for a number of years, and I think there's a lot of very well-intentioned, knowledgeable people who work there, and they work hard. But going through this report that they have put out in conjunction with this sale, the data that they've allowed for public comment really does not do an adequate job of reflecting the type of forest they're going to cut. And I think that that creates an issue of credibility for the department.
I thoroughly agree with the lack of credibility in the data they present in their pre-operations report. In addition, we've actually seen two versions of the pre-operations report, and the second ends up being very sloppily done and doesn't adequately track the different features of the sale. And given the quality of this forest and how special it is, it seems to me that it deserves the utmost of care, already seriously lacking to date. And so when I hear one of the ODF officials saying, we're going to be really thoughtful in how we move this thing forward and how we choose trees and so forth, I'm very skeptical. I really feel the most thoughtful management process at this point is to focus on retaining and protecting these very special areas as intact forest, not the kind of landscape I sense they are looking to create after they've logged this area.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the concerns the North Coast State Forest Coalition raised was that they might be disturbing habitat for the marbled murrelet. Mm-hmm. And what the Department of Forestry says is there aren't any there, nor are there any spotted owls in that area.
Well, my perspective is that there is almost no, or virtually no, marbled murrelet habitat available in this general area. The Area 2 portion of this sale has the kind of big old trees and moss pads on branches that would provide marbled murrelet habitat. Whether or not they managed to find any there so far, it is the best candidate for future murrelet habitat. It is also ideally situated on the banks of the Nehalem River, and the murrelets normally migrate inland along rivers. And so we've got an ideal situation with forest that has the kinds of characteristics that would qualify as murrelet habitat. So to log it and take it away just because you haven't found any yet, to me, is extremely inappropriate. And in fact, as I understand it, department officials literally have in public stated they want to eliminate older forest that would be murrelet habitat or spotted owl habitat in order to avoid the problems created by having to manage in relation to those species. Mm-hmm. So I'm concerned that they're actually just trying to make sure that there is no future murrelet habitat in order to make management easier for themselves.
Well, given that they have also have the responsibility of providing revenue mm-hmm. for local governments and so on, what would you have them do instead of what they're doing here?
Among other things, especially Area 2, which we find to be of major significance, if you look at the first version of the pre-op report and the most recent one, they have eliminated a value of timber between the two equal to what would come out of Area 2. So they've eliminated two other units that were in the earlier version. And the value of timber that comes out of, could come out of those is no longer being considered for logging. Well, they're moving forward with logging this very special area that we see as Area 2.
And what you mean by other units, other places where the cutting could take place?
Yes. In other words, in the pre-op report first version, there are seven areas mm-hmm. slated for logging. And there are two of those areas that now no longer appear in the most recent version of the report. And coincidentally, the value of the logs that would have come out of those two dropped units is essentially equal to what Area 2 would yield in their planning. So why not eliminate Area 2 and leave the other two in?
Mm-hmm. Now, are the other areas younger, smaller trees, or are they different some way from
area? They were of different characteristics, I would agree. In the case of Area 2, you're talking about logging exceptional habitat, trees of exceptional age, trees that have stood the test of time, and so the genetic information in these very old special trees is unusually valuable. Mm-hmm. And to eliminate those just as logs in the present, to me, is a gross miscarriage of the value of these trees. They're also valuable as straight-up habitat. In addition, these trees, in reality, are a relatively low value in a mill. In relation to the amount of wood and the amount of tree that you have on the ground in Area 2.
Well, there's even a problem now with lots of mills not being able to handle trees of that size, right?
There's a problem with mills handling big trees like this, but these big trees are also in a very special category. They have a large number of large dead limbs sticking out of the trunks of the trees at this point, and that produces loose knots and very low quality lumber. So these trees are actually unusually low quality logs to be put through a mill. And so we're sacrificing very high genetic values and environmental values and habitat values for logs that will be minimally valuable to a mill.
I think I read in their response to you that they more or less intended to work around those trees, and that gets back to your thoughts about whether leaving single trees or clumps of trees is adequate. Yeah. But I think that's what I read in here, that the trees that have all those branches, they're just not going to cut those particular trees.
And I would just add to Trigvi's response that, you know, the North Coast State Forest Coalition has been working on these forests for a number of years now, and this is the first timber sale we've really opposed and asked for it to be canceled or amended. And the reason is that we recognize this need to log in these forests, both for jobs and for revenue for taxing districts and counties. But there are much better areas in the forest to log, much better ways to log. And so, for example, every year the department comes out with this operation plan, and they have a number of sales that they intend to go through with, and then they have a number of alternate sales that are there in case one of the primary sales doesn't happen for some reason. And so it's not as though the department is looking around and not seeing any trees to cut. There are certainly alternatives to cutting the homesteader sale in terms of finding that timber and that revenue.
Well, what about clear cutting itself? What's the problem with clear cutting?
I'll answer very briefly, and then I imagine Trigg would like to say a lot. The North Coast State Forest Coalition is not on face value opposed to clear cutting. We'd like to see it minimized. We think it has a number of problematic outcomes, both ecologically and for public health. That said, it's also a very cost-effective way to log. Mm-hmm. So it's part of the logging program that is the political and historical reality of these forests. Is it the best way to log? Probably not. And I imagine Trigby has some other thoughts on clear cutting.
The Clatsop State Forest very clearly does a lot of very excellent selective logging. I've seen a lot of really great commercial thins out on the Clatsop, and so they don't really need to clear cut. By doing a commercial thin or leaving a lot more trees behind, you have the option of having the canopy act to deflect the wind and minimize blowdown and damage to trees from the kinds of high winds we get here on the coast. And when you're going to do a clear cut and try to leave a few thoughtfully chosen trees behind in a basic clear cut, you make the trees that you've left behind incredibly vulnerable to wind throw, to be literally blown over by the wind, or broken off and damaged, and basically render your decision to try to leave some trees behind useless.
Let me back up and ask how a timber sale works. Now, the Oregon Department of Forestry is not cutting the trees. What they will do is go out to bid, I guess, to private companies who will bid for the right to clear cut this particular timber sale. And then that's where the money comes from that goes to the various entities.
Yeah, so the department staff actually goes out and lays out these sales and determines where they're cutting, how they're cutting, what they're cutting, and you know all the intricacies that go into laying out a sale, and then they provide that information, and then timber companies will see the sale, and then they'll bid on it. And the department will work with the company as the sale is going through to ensure that the timber company is carrying out the process as the department envisioned, and they may amend things on the way, but it's at the forefront, it's the Department of Forestry, and then it's my understanding that it's a relationship between the department and whatever timber company has bought the sale, working together as they actually do the logging mm-hmm. and the projects associated with it.
And what you were just saying is that there are sales where a commercial company has done selective logging because those are the rules the Oregon Department of Forestry
yes.
set out for that spot.
Yeah. And particularly in a lot of the mid-successional forest that's very crowded on the Clatsop, going in and doing a careful selective logging operation allows them to open up the forest and improve the growth of the remaining trees that are left behind. And by leaving a reasonable density of trees on the landscape, the crown of those trees create a buffer for the wind, so no tree's kind of left out there standing all by itself with the full impact of the wind on it. Mm-hmm. You know, a tree in a normal forest is actually protected by its neighbors, so the forest ends up being a system where all the trees derive benefit and protection from wind. When you start trying to leave individual trees as the planning for the homesteader sale, that to me is an untenable situation for risking the trees you leave behind.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add, I've actually been out in this same basin that we're talking about with Department of Forestry staff, the unit forester, and actually the former district forester. And they've been very proud of some of the thins they've managed to carry out and the amount of volume that they've received from those operations. So it's not at all an uncommon or unproductive way of logging.
the conventional wisdom is that Douglas firs require a fully open area and basically a clear cut to produce that. In fact, in many instances, you create an environment that's so extreme and harsh that the Douglas firs don't even grow in the clear cut where theoretically they would grow best.
Well, expand on that a little bit. I've heard that argument that the clear cut actually permits things to happen in the environment that are good things and that favors some species and some animals and so on.
Yeah, clear cutting is a complex issue, but at this point, I think there is so much clear cut landscape here in the Coast Range that adding to the array of clear cut landscape is not really of a net benefit. Mm-hmm. I think that it's particularly important and valuable to not bear the costs of clear cutting, which include higher sedimentation into streams and risks to the salmon resource and problems for fishermen. A widely unrecognized dimension of doing clear cutting is that there are really great problems with the soil after you've clear cut. Clear cut operations routinely compact soil to a degree that you seriously disrupt an appropriate and normal soil ecology, so that by clear cutting, and especially clear cutting in a repeated way, you ultimately degrade the fundamental soil resource mm-hmm. on which growing trees depends.
Mm-hmm. I would just add to that. I think, you know, clear cutting is kind of a crude way of mimicking a forest disturbance that creates early seral habitat, which, as you noted, is important to some species. And, you know, the other thing that's really coming to bear on Oregon forestry issues is that after you clear cut, you apply herbicide, often from a helicopter or a plane. And I think most people have already heard about the issues around that and the legislative conversation that brought up. So that's another outcome of clear cutting.
Well, just to distinguish here, too, now we're talking about the class of state forest, which is public land. A private landowner who has forested land can clear cut if he wants to or she wants to, right? Does the Department of Forestry have any influence about what's done on private land?
The Department of Forestry is responsible for ensuring that private landowners adhere to the Forest Practices Act, which is kind of the baseline rules governing forestry in Oregon and is widely considered the weakest set of regulations for forestry along the West Coast.
Right now, for example, I understand there's a debate going on about what the setback should be from streams on any kind of cut on private land, and they're having trouble finding a place to set that.
Yeah, that's right. The Board of Forestry recently formed another subcommittee to hopefully deal with that issue, but it's a disappointing continuation of inaction on basically antiquated regulations that science shows don't do an adequate job of protecting the quality and temperature of water in Oregon.
Well, in their response to you, the Department of Forestry said that they maintain more than 30% of the forest for long-term complex forest conditions. But I recall you mentioning before that the flip side of that is that means 70% of the forest is cuttable, and also that 30% keeps moving around. Is that what you said?
Yeah, there's a few things to examine here. So that 30% that they maintain for complex forest is, like you said, a moving target. There are no long-term conservation designations on the Tillamook or Clatsop State forests. So that's of concern, and I think that ratio would also open some eyes if folks knew that only 30% was designated for complex forest. But also, Trigvi and I have seen some of that area that is designated for conservation, and perhaps as the forest ecologist, Trigvi could weigh in on the quality of habitat that some of those areas are providing in contrast to an area like Homesteader.
Both Chris and I have spent significant time in the Buster Terrestrial Anchor. And that terrestrial anchor is a significant area that has been set aside to protect forest habitat. The problem is the terrestrial anchor contains very abundant early mid-successional kinds of forest where you basically have such a dense canopy, there's nothing on the forest floor except a very thin layer of organic horizon in the soil. The quality of the forest habitat in the terrestrial anchor is vastly less than what they're planning on logging here. So the exceptional characteristics of the forest in Homesteader really belong in some kind of a protected status. Perhaps it's a little far from the terrestrial anchor, but certainly it is worthy of the designation high-value conservation area. So it seems to me very paradoxical to be protecting younger forest, which is quite common and not nearly as valuable. Well, on the other hand, they're literally planning on logging some of the most exceptional forest out there in this Homesteader timber sale.
And just to be clear, that 30% that is designated to become complex forest, that by no means is off limits from logging. In fact, it's very, very frequently thin. So the amount of forest in the Clatsop that actually cannot be logged is pretty minuscule. It's basically inner riparian zones next to rivers and streams.
So to sum up, since we're about out of time, I guess, you understand that the Oregon Department of Forestry does need to permit logging on state forest land in order to generate revenue. And your argument is more about which parts to log and where and how much.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the Clatsop State Forest is home to some of the fastest tree-growing soil and conditions in the world. There is enough forest out there to meet the needs that the department needs to meet. It's certainly difficult, and I don't envy their position in balancing all those needs, but I think logging and clear-cutting the Homesteader sale areas would be a drastic mismanagement and a step away from meeting those balance values.
Again, I think there's abundant forest to produce logs that are very well-suited to the kinds of milling capacity that's available here in the county and would produce very adequate flows of revenue. I think that given how exceptional and valuable the forest in Homesteader is in terms of its characteristics and older forest, it should be protected as high-value conservation area and not be in the pipeline for logging.
All right. We've been talking with Trygve Steen, longtime faculty member and forest ecologist from Portland State University, and with Chris Smith, the coordinator for the North Coast State Forest Coalition. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you very much. And I would encourage folks to check out forestlegacy.org if you'd like to learn more.
You've been listening to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.